Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for April 9th, 2020. Day 28, 9, 10, vice, I don't even know. Is it a day? Is it a weekend? Is this an extra show? Am I sure what I'm doing is right? I don't honestly know. I kind of know. I have calendar reminders that keep me on track, if nothing else. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. I appreciate the hell out of you listening and spending some of your isolation with me. Lots of new listeners. The interview format continues because I find it engaging, and so do you, it seems. So I appreciate that. I will say that tomorrow's Friday. I know that because I have an interview scheduled for later today, meaning Thursday, even though it's technically Wednesday-ish right now, to talk to David Limbaugh. Yes, the great David Limbaugh returns tomorrow. So if you got a question for David, you can email me, derek@dailycaller.com, and I'll try to remember to get to it. But David is a funny guy, super smart, wicked smart, as they say up in Boston. And when he gets going, you just kind of let him go and you get out of the way, you gird your loins and you cover up, you duck and cover when David Limbaugh gets going. So I'll try to get some of your questions in for David. But David's so super engaging on social media that you could probably get your David Limbaugh questions answered. Well, I guess it would still be answered by David Limbaugh, but you could probably get him on Twitter because he's on there a lot. God, aren't we all on there a lot? Holy cow. It's probably best to take a break from Twitter every once in a while. But yes, the plan is, and now that I've said it, something horrible will happen. The internet will go out or whatever. But that's the plan. David agreed earlier in the week to come in on Thursday because it'll be for the Friday show. And it'll be an interview. You can watch me and sitting in front of a cat tree in my basement studio office and talk to David Limbaugh in his much more impressive office, by the way. His office is way better than mine. This is like a redheaded stepchild's bedroom. You know, like, oh, just put up some walls and we'll put Earl in there. Screw Earl. Throw him in the basement. But yeah, David Limbaugh on the show tomorrow. Today's guest is somebody you may not have heard of, but you should have and should know about. It is Liz Scheld. We've been friends for a long time. She's one of the really super connected people in Washington, D.C. She's the maker behind the scenes that doesn't seek the spotlight. But if you really want to know what's going on and pick somebody's brain, it's Liz. She's at Star Chambermaid on Twitter. She is the executive editor over at American Greatness. Just a really fun lady. You may know her boyfriend. She name drops his pen name a couple of times in there. But it's a private person. So I'm not going to fully expose who he is, but you might be able to do the math on that. See if you can guess. I can't confirm nor deny anything, but it'll be a fun little Easter egg in there for you. Speaking of Easter eggs, yesterday I went, well, the day before, Wednesday, I went to Target. And I just got to say, it's really weird. I was gloved up. I wore a mask for the first time in public. Very bizarre. And the mask I have makes it difficult to breathe. It almost felt like I was inhaling harder. I'm not really sure if that's what you should want in a mask. I don't know. But I bought the girls Easter baskets. So they gotta have Easter. I gotta hard boil some eggs. I gotta have the Easter bunny come. The Easter bunny is immune to coronavirus. I don't know if you know this or not. So don't forget to go out and get your Easter baskets and stuff. It's mostly like some candy and that just make a mess with candy. They hold chocolate till it melts all over the place and slowly eat it. And they savor it far too much for chocolate. But I got them coloring books and stuff like that of Frozen 2 and PJ Masks, or maybe Paw Patrol, whatever god-awful thing they're into. So they'll have an Easter. And then yesterday, Thursday, I went and picked up a honey-baked ham, which was another experience. I told the wife, like, I'm going to go check and see if they got ham. Because I didn't want to go to the grocery store because that's going to be too crowded. Plus, once a year, you can splurge and get honey-baked ham for Easter. And I drove past there, and I did like I'm about to do a drive-by. I checked it out. I think I recount this to Liz in the interview. But I saw a lady go in, waited. Lady came out. I suited up, went in there, bought my ham, paid, got out of there. So we've got honey-baked. Don't have any sides. Like a can of vegetables would be the side. But we've at least got some good Easter ham, and it's one of the few things that the girls actually eat without throwing it on the floor. They're smearing it in their hair. Don't have kids. I'm just kidding. Have kids. Anyway, shout out to our sponsor, AncientLifeOil.com. Yes, the finest quality CBD oil. I am a true believer in CBD oil, the power of CBD oil for the aches, the pains, the anxiety, the stress, whatever you got going on. It works for my eye strain. It works for my back. It works for my knees. It helps me sleep. It takes me a very long time to fall asleep, and I get to sleep much quicker and much better, even though not any longer, with CBD oil from AncientLifeOil.com. Google for yourself. Find out what other people are saying. Look into it, and you say, hey, you know what? If this works, this will be great for me. Then you give it a shot. You go to AncientLifeOil.com. They're having a huge sale right now. Check your flavor, check your dosage, and then enter promo code Derek at checkout, and you get free fast shipping on top of it all. You help out the program, lets them know you heard it here, and you help out yourself. So it's the circle of life. I appreciate them very much, and I really do. I'm using the cinnamon right now. The cinnamon, the 500 milligram stuff, is working like aces for my back. So check that out, AncientLifeOil.com. All right, we get into it with Liz. We have Liz is just fun. Liz comes over and with her boyfriend, and we have like adult game nights and stuff. Just come over and good people, go to dinner with them and all that good stuff. It'll be like you're sitting at the table with us with dinner, except there's less talking with our mouthful, slightly less talking of it with a mouthful. So I appreciate that. I appreciate Liz. I appreciate you guys for listening. The website, if you care to help, is patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. No obligation there, but every little bit is appreciated more than you could ever know. Have a great Thursday. If you got David Limbaugh questions, get them in by like 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time today. I know it's short notice, but I mentioned to Liz that David is on the show tomorrow, so I got to give it up at the beginning of the show today because I've already let the cat out of the bag. So if there's a jinx, I've already jinxed it. So we'll be back tomorrow. Here's Liz Scheld. All right, as we've been doing throughout this apocalypse, we check in with people around the world, well, around the country. We haven't done the other side of the world yet. Find out how they're surviving this dystopian Mad Max landscape, whether or not Master Blaster has sent them into Thunderdome, and who runs Barter Town. And this is no different. We're joined from just across the border this time by a good friend of mine. I often have really smart people on and some people that I barely know. This time we have probably one of the smartest people we've had on and one of the people I know best, but is least known. It's Liz Scheld. She's executive editor at American Greatness. Welcome, Liz. Thanks for taking the time. Not that you didn't have it on your hands.
I got nothing else to do, Derek. I'm a hostage.
It's very flattering. That's the beauty of it, because I ask people, like, I always ask, hey, are you free usually on Thursdays for the regular interview in the past? And now it's like, I know everybody's free. It's just whether or not they're in the middle of watching Tiger King or something and whether or not they want to be interviewed. But it's never a matter of, I can't do that. I'm too busy. It's impossible for me to do.
It's you hard to get blown off right now.
Yeah,
it's like, no, what are you doing? I mean, you really aren't. Maybe you're in the shower, but other than that, you're not doing something else. You're at home.
Unless you live in one of the Dakotas, you're pretty much home. You're pretty much screwed. And that's the beauty. That's how you pull an Adam Baldwin, honestly, is you know he's not golfing. So it's like, okay, Adam, let's do this thing. Liz, first of all, how is life in isolation over in Northern? You're in Northern Virginia. I talked to Cam Edwards in sort of Southern,
Virginia. Yeah, I call it Real Virginia.
You live in concentrated Virginia. Yes. He is not from concentrate.
It's, you know, it's quiet, and I live in Arlington, which is very busy usually and vibrant and loud, and it's very quiet, and I see people taking walks with their children, and that's about it. It hasn't turned into pandemonium yet. The people haven't revolted. They'll never do it here. Everyone's kind of a tractable, docile follower of government orders, except for me.
They're working for government by and large, right. Either directly or indirectly.
Yeah, well, they're not going to lose their jobs because they're all paid, you know, they're subsidized. They're paid, actually paid to work for the taxpayer. So they're right. Solid.
It's just a matter of whether or not there'll be any taxpayers at the end of this.
That's
anybody
true.
Paying taxes to pay them. But still, the government will just go, run the printing press another day. What the hell? Let's move them. What do you do over there? It makes it sound like you're on the other side of the planet. But how are you finding passing the time? I'm getting attacked by kids. I'm still working. But in general, it's I got to watch TV. You got to watch Frozen 15 times a day. But there's always something to do, especially with kids. You don't have any kids. What are you doing to pass the time? You're bothering the hell out of your cat?
Well, I have to say that I work from home, so it's not different for me. Sadly, I work a lot, so it's pretty much the usual routine. I wake up, I go to, you know, I take a shower, or sometimes I don't, and I just work, and then I work, and then 5 o'clock, I get ready for the press conference, the daily message from the mothership. And then, you know, I read or I try and watch. Sometimes I'll watch Tucker. I'll read a little bit. Then I'll go to sleep and I'll do it again. And maybe I'll go to the grocery store. we don't go to the grocery store that often, although it's getting harder and harder to have your stuff delivered, groceries.
You have to plan it like a week out or something.
Yes.
You know, it's not a matter of they have 2-hour delivery, but you can't get it. You can get it by next Wednesday.
Well, the trick is, so we use Instacart and then also Amazon Prime Now. And the trick with Amazon Prime Now is you get the things you want in your shopping cart, and then you just have to keep checking back constantly because they open up windows the same day. So if you're lucky, you just need to move on it. But the problem is, of course, that a lot of times they're out. If you want something in high demand, like toilet paper, which is like the new gold standard now,
right.
Is if you want toilet paper, sometimes by the time you finally get a window, it's out. But yeah, I mean, we do have to go to the store because we can't wait sometimes. Or, you know, look, there's vanity food, right? I mean, we have food technically to subsist. By the way, if you hear a noise in the background, it's my cat who is locked out of my office and he does not like doors being closed.
No, cats, they want to be on the other side of the door, no matter what side
whatever
of the closed
door
they're on.
Yeah. So I don't want you to think I'm torturing someone. It's my cat is just howling outside my door.
That's a good cover story.
It is. But so, you know, we have food, right? But we don't.
Right, but who are we going to sit down and eat a can of Campbell's Stars and chicken and stars? Because right. I don't want to eat that. I'm an adult.
We have we have food. We actually have very good food. But Ace found this new ice cream, this keto ice cream. So we've been looking for that. We found it. So we have to
get it. Your boyfriend is obsessed with the keto diet.
Well, yeah. So it's this keto. It's like coffee keto ice cream. It's good. So. Yeah, so we have to go get that, and we can't order it online. And, you know, we're in and out quick. The grocery stores are really good. There's somebody that's literally, like, doing, like, a Silkwood shower type thing to all the carts before you take one and go in to get your stuff. And a lot of people were wearing masks. We had to go to the store yesterday. I was surprised that a lot of people were wearing masks. So
that's the thing is my wife, you're also good friends with my wife. She hasn't gone to the store. She hasn't gone anywhere. She's been working from home, and I've said, you want to go for a drive just to get out of the house? And she's like, no, I'm fine. I don't really want her to go to the store because the first time you go to the grocery store, it's a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a big smack across the face is, holy shit, this is different. You know, and she knows what's going on. She works in news. She knows what's happening out there. It's not like it would be complete shock to her, but knowing it and seeing it are two different things. And if she can avoid seeing it, I think that would probably be better for her. When you go out, what strikes you? Is it the number of people wearing masks? Because last week it didn't seem like that many people were wearing masks, so they were around. Now I went to Honey Baked Ham. I scouted it out. I did the whole thing. I drove through and looked in really close, like I was going to do a drive-by or something, looking, seeing there's nobody in there. Waited in the parking lot as this old lady who looked like she was going there. She went in, and I thought, well, I'll wait for her to get out. She gets out. I had my gloves on. I had a mask on. I was like, I'm ready to go rob this joint is what, you know, 2 months ago, I'd have been arrested walking into Honey Baked Ham. Like this, but yeah. There I go, and I went in and I bought my Easter ham, and got out of there as quickly. It really was like a bank robbery, but it's kind of the new normal. Last week, you couldn't have made me wear a mask. I'd have felt like an asshole putting a mask on, but I was wearing gloves. Now it's like, well, I got a mask. I got a few masks because, you know, for working around the house and doing some manual labor, sanding and things, and it's like, yeah, this is kind of the new normal. And now what really sticks out to me, Liz, is the people who don't have masks on.
Yes.
It's weird how quickly that changed.
We're being mask shamed because I did not have masks. I did not wear masks. Ace did not wear masks. I have masks. I'm not in that mindset 100% where like way I am with hand sanitizer, which I'm really good about the hand sanit, having that with me and being very careful to put it all every time I touch something, I put sanitizer on my hands when I'm out, but I haven't gotten into the I'm wearing a mask now thing.
Are you wearing gloves?
No, but I don't wear gloves because my strategy is I go in so sad. I go into the store. I'm very careful not to touch my face and not to. It's a quick thing. I go in, get what I need. It's not none of this like walking up and down the aisles like, oh, should I get, you know, Campbell's beef stew or should I get Dinty Moore stew? It's like I'm there. I'm on a mission. I don't touch my face. I get out of the store. I put my groceries in the car and then I put the hand sanitizer on. And then once I get home and I unload the groceries, I wash my hands for the 20 seconds. And they're just really dried and cracked now because I'm like the girl who washed her hands to death or whatever.
No, I'm ready for surgery. I never use lotion. And now I had to buy lotion for the first time in my life because my knuckles are just dry as hell from being washed.
It's true. But
it's see, I have a better routine. You need to get yourself some rubber gloves. I go to the grocery store. Then what the hell?
I have like nitrile gloves. And then I also have like bright yellow dishwashing gloves. And I don't. I wonder if I should wear the bright yellow ones, like the rubber ducky bright yellow.
Bright neon green nitrite gloves. That it was all the double X, you know, I have extra long fingers. So I had to get the big gloves. And yeah, they stick out. I can go hunting in these gloves and be completely safe. But I go in and I glove up. Now I mask up too, but I glove up. I keep my left hand in my pocket with my iPhone. And I have, if I know where I'm going, I know whether or not they take Apple Pay, which means I don't have to touch anything to pay.
Yeah.
If I'm unsure, I take my credit card out of my wallet and put it in next to my phone so I can grab either one with my left hand that's completely protected. I push the shopping cart around with one hand. I touch everything with that one gloved right hand, put it in the cart. I go up, I go through checkout with that one gloved hand, and then I pull my phone out or I pull my credit card out and pay. And then I load up the cart, go unload the car. Then I take off the gloves once I'm in. So I don't even touch my my keys. It's paranoid. And it's not because I'm afraid. It's my kids. Like, I would just die if I got my kids sick. So it's very weird. It's a game, but it's a very creepy game because it really is a game. And like, oh shit, I brushed my shoulder against the box of Cheerios or whatever as I was stumbling down the aisle. Then I know that when I get home, that sucker's going right in the wash.
You know, I had this moment yesterday where I couldn't remember where I was in my sequence of like decontamination when my nose itched and I just kind of touched it with my finger and, you know, and then I was struck by this terror that went through my body and I was like, oh my God, you know, have I contaminated myself? But I wonder how damaged are we going to be when this is over, if it ever ends? You know, these are really kind of traumatic changes for
it is people. And you and I spoke earlier today and we're both, you know, people sitting there listening going, what the fuck, are these people just nutballs? Do they snort Purell at home? Like, what's wrong with these people? The boy in the plastic bubble? No, we talked earlier today. You are in agreement with me largely about the validity or lack thereof of the models. So we understand the risks are incredibly low, that the statistics are overblown. This is all about future projections and not actual fact. It's like a magic eight ball. And we still have these thoughts. It's almost impossible to escape them, even when you sit there and you go, I'm not sure I buy all of this shit.
Well, it's like a movie. We've all seen the movie about this, right? Like the pathogen or contagion or something. And it's this sort of invisible enemy that's microscopic. It's got all the makings of a movie, and it's actually been several movies. So you get kind of caught up in it, especially for people like me and you, Derek, where our job is the news, right? We need to follow the news. We can't take a break. So to follow the news, which has these like sort of ghoulish death counts all the time, it's constantly permanently on the news stations and on Twitter, and every news article you read has some, you know, flatten the curve and there's this many people dead and this many people more died and ventilators. And so you get worried. And the media, of course, if it bleeds, it leads. And they're, of course, invested in tragedy and failure of the American people. So they're constantly telling terrible stories about really heartbreaking stories of first responders who are sitting near people that are gasping for their last breath. And it gets to you. It really does. I think a lot of people are going to have PTSD. And I don't say that as somebody who's forced to read the news all day long. I'm talking about our people in the medical industry, doctors, nurses, LPNs, all these assistants that work in the hospitals, especially in the hot zones where it's really, really rough. I mean, this is going to change our culture in a big way.
Can you foresee any way that it's better, that it will change it for the better? Because I'm personally opposed to the hug of people you don't really know.
I'm not a hugger either.
Oh, it's so good to see you. A hug. I'm like, I don't want to hug you, but I can't say I don't want to hug you. Now I can say I don't want to hug you. But otherwise, people more considerate. I don't think that the idea of one thing I hope that sticks is people who are sick wearing masks in public. Because all too often, you just see people coughing into their hands, and you thought nothing of it. Now you run for cover. You want to throw a blanket over them or whatever. I haven't been around anybody who coughed in a while, but I imagine somebody sneezes near you the next time we're at a restaurant. Everybody's going to be, I don't know, ducking for cover, throwing their napkin over their face or whatever. Do you see any good coming out of this?
Yeah, I think it is important to remember how many people the flu kills every year. And that's not to minimize this particular virus that we're dealing with right now, but people do get sick and they do die from it. Like many people die, tens of thousands of people die a year from the flu. And you wonder how much of that could be avoided or mitigated with a little bit of self-awareness of hygiene. And hopefully that will that will leave a mark. And that's something that we should take away from this. And also, I do hope that employers really understand that if your employee is sick, please don't force them to come into the office.
Yeah, you've got a, everybody's got a sick policy or whatever, but just make, no, look, we don't want you here. All right. It's not going to, we're going to screw you over because how dare you not come in because you had the sniffles. I think that day is hopefully done.
Yeah, no, that's so important. It's been a long time since I've worked in an office, but I remember there's that pressure. You have to come in. And now I think we're better set up technology wise for people to work from home for a day or two if they feel they're sick, and don't bring it in and in like little typhoid Marys just spreading your poison all over the office. So I hope that's a change, but it's really hard to say. I think this is going to be even more divisive than we already are divided, both politically and culturally, from people who you know, I think like you and I, who are a little bit more kind of skeptical and a little bit distant. We're not looking at this emotionally. We're looking at it like, well, what do the models say? The models are wrong. We're getting information. It seems contradictory. We're looking at it, I think, a little bit less emotional than some of our political opponents that are very hysterical, and everything that happens has some. Yeah,
but do you really believe that Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are sitting up at night going, oh my God, I don't understand. We need to bend the curve even further. Or do you think, well, I've always wanted paid family medical leave and sick leave for every job everywhere. This is a golden opportunity. This is the opportunity we've been waiting for.
Well, did you see that picture of Chuck Schumer? It was on Twitter, of him wearing his mask like under his nose. Like,
yes.
His nose isn't in the mask. So, and there's one of Sheila Jackson Lee, who, of course, is the lead you know, she's the head of the Congressional COVID-19 Virus Committee or whatever, that's also did the same thing. So, I don't think that our politicians are super concerned about this. I think that Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are making their big wish list. I mean, it kind of failed on the last, I don't know what to call it, stimulus bailout.
Relief.
But they're already cooking up the fourth, and they're just going to try and get all sorts of things in there, like voting by mail and, right, you know, just crazy things that honestly, people are dying. A lot of the country is scared. I mean, we don't need these games right now. Let's just get the people help who need it, and then deal with your controversial political fantasies when it's over.
That's the thing, is if you have to have a tragedy like this to get your way, you don't really have, it's fake. You know, you give up on trying. You can't win. You know, you can't win the argument based on merit. So you say, this is it. This is an opportunity. That's kind of what Rahm Emanuel was saying when he said he never let a good crisis go to waste, is, well, this is your chance to push things through that you otherwise wanted. Liberalism needs a delivery device, right? We don't want a heavily taxed or government to heavily tax us and regulate the economy to the point that jobs are screwed and people are government dependent. But if you can frame it in, you're destroying the planet and you're going to wipe out the, if we don't do these things, Democrats want all of the, they want more government dependence, but people don't want that. But if you couch it under, well, it's to save the planet for your children and grandchildren, then suddenly it's really easy to get behind that as a concept, because you go, well, I obviously want to save the planet. I want to leave it to my children and grandchildren. And that's kind of this. It is, well, you don't want small businesses to do this. You don't want a $15 minimum wage because it'll destroy low-wage jobs. But if you want to help people we've screwed over, you got to throw us this bone too. And it's a special kind of evil, is how I view it.
Oh, it definitely is. And I also think that this is a good opportunity for people to observe how the government has functioned in this crisis, and then ask themselves if this is the body that they want to turn over more responsibility of their lives to, right? So going back to kind of the beginning, I guess, the beginning of, you know, January, the end of January, Trump shut down travel from China, And then he did Europe, and then they had the CDC making the test. They didn't want the World Health Organization tests, which probably honestly don't work or were not accurate. And then the CDC screwed up the test, and then we're behind, and then we're trying to get this stuff to the places it needs to go, and our national stockpile is depleted, and a bunch of governors didn't bother keeping up. And I want to say to people, so you want to put the entire healthcare system in these people's control? You want more government involved in your life? This government is a big, clumsy behemoth, right? And the people trying to help, whether it's with tests, faster tests, different diagnostic inventions, right? Inventing like the 5-minute test, the 15-minute test, whatever, all these things that are cropping up. Those things didn't happen until all of the ridiculous government red tape was actually lifted. And then we had a bunch of innovation, but it'll go back to the same old again once we're, you know, I guess we flatten the curve, or when we go back to somewhat normal. And again, is this the way you want the important things in your life managed? Oh, and again, people trying to call up to get their relief checks or file whatever they need to file to get their loans, to get that $1,200 or whatever, they can't get through. The websites are crashing. The phones aren't working. Again, I say, like, perhaps you should work on being more self-sufficient and not putting as much faith and authority in the hands of the government, because it's not the smartest idea.
What a novel idea. What a crazy idea. No, it always makes me laugh when liberalism points out that the government has failed. We need bigger government is essentially their argument. Big government has failed us. We need bigger government. I don't know how you make that argument with a straight face, but that there is 40% of the population who will nod along like a bobblehead on the dashboard of a car going down a bumpy road is what scares me more than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, big government did fail, but, you know, complete government takeover, that's going to be the one that fixes it.
That's the fix. And that's when it happens during these crises, is right. When people make irrational, emotion-based decisions on policy, like shutting our entire economy down because some quirky model predicted whatever, 3 million people were going to die, and now it's been grossly, obviously it was grossly wrong. But, you know, we shut our government down. So, great.
Well, let's talk about that choice, because Joe Biden, it's not that it's ever really a good time to be Joe Biden, but Joe Biden is having a tough time running for president right now. Bernie Sanders has called it a day, finally. I don't know what he was waiting for. And the fact that maybe it was the fact that people voted the other day in Wisconsin and they didn't need to vote. You know, like Bernie, people went out to vote for Bernie or to vote for Biden against Bernie, not just the local issues. So not everybody in line was, but people did. And maybe Bernie said, I know I'm going to lose. Maybe I should stop people from going out to vote for this lost cause. But he's out. Joe Biden was having a hard enough time being relevant. And I've never seen anybody do a video chat more awkwardly than Joe Biden. He doesn't seem to understand the technology. He's not really sure what's going on, but he's doing them because he's trying to do something. I believe that Joe Biden is much better in the abstract than he is in reality. As a concept, Democrats can rally around him. Even some independents who don't like the president can rally around him because he's not Trump. But to watch Joe Biden, you go, oh my God, he's not there. You know, he's lost. So in a way, I think isolation and limited things that he can do are better for Joe Biden right now in the long run.
Oh,
but that hasn't
absolutely stopped
his campaign from going, we need to get Joe out there. We need to make sure Joe's in the news. And then he goes and says something stupid or senile or wrong. And it just seems to perpetuate the cycle. Can he get out of his own way?
I think that social distancing is the greatest thing that could have happened for Joe Biden, right? Or he's socially distancing from voters
right now.
He
still wants to smell their hair. It's been a while since he smelled anybody.
You can't do that in your weird basement library. but he does. He really, if he were had the skills, he would use this opportunity to sort of provide a contrast to Trump, according to the Democrats, who's Trump is, of course, the worst ever. And so there's an opening for Biden to kind of come out and say, hey, this is let me show you what a leader I am. Let me show you how strong I am. Let me show you how what command of the situation I have. This guy can't get a sentence out. You know, he's no. looks confused. He talks in, I don't know, mumbo jumbo. I do think Joe Biden is a concept, and the concept is not Trump. But if you are in the middle of a panic, like a lot of people in our country are now, especially the Democrats, about this virus, and you look at a video of Joe Biden, are you feel safe turning the ship over to him to captain? Because I don't know about that. I don't think so.
I see Joe Biden going, the iceberg, it's gonna move.
Choo-choo or whatever. He'd be like the person hitting the horn all the time on the boat, you know, when you hear the boat. That's Biden. So he's lucky, because I think it would be much worse if he were forced to be out there a lot and actually campaign. And I don't think Bernie would have dropped out if we hadn't had this shutdown, right. Because Bernie is pretty good on the campaign trail. People like him. He's got a lot of energy for someone his age, much like Trump, whereas Biden is just definitely low energy. And if there was active campaigning for the last month, then maybe Bernie wouldn't feel like he needed to drop out. I don't know, but it would have been more competitive. At this point, what can Bernie do except send emails, right, and ask for money? I mean, the very limited ability to campaign right now, except for Donald J. Trump, who's on television every day at 5 o'clock for like 2 hours, beating down the media like a little bitch. So this is good for him in a campaign scenario, because he's out there, you know, in all his presidentialness, barking orders, telling people what's going on, numbers of masks here, there, tests, this one, that one, China, you know, all that stuff. People are like, yeah, this guy's the president. And what does Biden have to compare it to right now? Nothing.
It's my understanding that Joe Biden knows Barack Obama. Cause I think I heard him mention that once or twice.
They're going to be, that's the only play they have. They're going to get Obama out there. But even if they do that, what is Obama going to do? I mean, he can make some videos, right? He'll make some videos. He'll maybe do some videos and put them on Twitter or YouTube or whatever the kids, TikTok or whatever their apps are today. But that's it. He can't go out and shake hands and kiss babies. He can't go out on the campaign trail. So, you know, I think they'll try to use Obama. The question is how effective is Obama going to be in this, like, you know, cage that we're all in right now?
Right. Well, Barack Obama's been a wildly ineffective campaigner. That's one thing that people always, especially in the media, forget. They're sitting around going, oh, will Barack Obama endorse? Will Barack Obama endorse? He's been the kiss of death for Democrats in the general election. I don't know how it's been any different in the primaries, but in the general election, he has, you know, Martha Coakley lost in Massachusetts, replacing Ted Kennedy with a Republican, for God's sake. Race across the country, people look at Barack Obama. He's, I think, another sort of concept that is much more appealing to people than in reality.
He didn't get Hillary in, right? He couldn't get Hillary across the finish line in 2016. So,
well, it's dead weight. Nobody, she's all hips.
Dead weight. Yeah.
When you look at the Democrat, Joe Biden said the other day that he thinks that maybe the Democratic convention should be a virtual convention. I'm not sure he knows what that is. He probably thinks it's like some old Keanu Reeves movie where you put on these goggles and this digital Tron-like world shows up. But do you see the Democrats, because I know they don't want Joe Biden on that stage with Donald Trump, do you see them trying to use this as an excuse to make sure that there aren't debates?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. I mean, that's their worst nightmare for sure. And debates, any appearance that Biden's going to make, I think the Democrats are going to really draw out the danger of our freedom coming back. And this will be an excuse to keep Biden in a very, very controlled environment, much like Hillary did in 2016, where she kind of wasn't really heavy on the campaign trail. She wasn't out there a lot in an open forum the way Trump was interacting with people. I think that they're going to do that with Biden, probably for a similar reason, because it seemed like Hillary wasn't also in great health when she was campaigning in 2016. So I do think that they're going to come up with any reason to keep Biden away from the public. And absolutely, they are going to do anything they can to keep Biden from being on a stage with Trump. 100%.
And you mentioned this earlier. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that, because I think they're terrified. You mentioned this earlier about Donald Trump holding court at usually closer to 5:30 or 6 o'clock, even though it's scheduled earlier. And he really comes out and dominates the media there. He comes out with a command of facts, reports numbers, reports data, and then takes all comers. And whatever questions you got on anything, the more ridiculous ones are, of course, from CNN and things like that. But as you watch this and as you see, the most disturbing thing, I think, of all these press conferences is not anything that's happened up on stage. There were a couple of times where I thought, I wish that wouldn't have been said, or I wish that wouldn't have happened, because I knew that was going to be the focus. But the decision by the networks to go, we're not interested in this. And the argument, so many people in the media arguing that no one should carry that live, that it's damaging to our democracy to have Donald Trump on television unfiltered for 2 hours. Have you ever heard of a journalist going, what we really need is less access and less information?
Well, these aren't really journalists, right? These are political activists. Those are the idea that you would intentionally withhold the president of the United States and his team of scientists and logistic experts that are managing this terrible national crisis, that you would withhold that from people is something you would do if you are a propagandist and you want to put it through your little mill of spin and then present it to the people. That's that. In fact, here's an example. It's kind of related, not to Trump, but this morning I was talking to my mother. My mom's a Democrat. It is what it is. And she was complaining about how Wisconsin had to vote. And I was like, oh, I haven't even looked at the results. And I said, oh, I didn't even see what the results are. And my mom said, oh, well, they can't be published until next Monday because of the Republicans wouldn't allow them. And I said, that's interesting. Why would, what would be the purpose of that? She goes, I don't know. I just heard it. She watches CNN. So I looked it up. I went to the local newspaper and I went to Wisconsin. And it turns out they're not publishing the results until they count all the absentee ballots, because they can't publish partially part of the results. I think it's a law.
Damn Republicans ruining everything by allowing absentee balloting.
But that's the function the media plays. The media tells the people what to think and what they want to believe and what they tend to believe anyway. So they're not there to ask to get information, to convey important information, or to ask the questions that the average American wants to know. They're not there to get answers on those things. They're there to ask questions like, why aren't you wearing a mask? Or are you still shaking hands with people? That's what the brain trust at CNN is asking, even though they have the head of infectious diseases, Dr. Fauci, or they have Dr. Birx, or these generals that are commanding the ventilators and all this stuff. They don't want to talk to those people. They want to know, why is the president not wearing a mask? Has the president gotten a test? Has the president, like, it's just ridiculous.
You've known a lot of journalists, mostly conservative journalists. Yeah. One of your best friends is Molly Hemingway.
Yeah.
At Fox News and The Federalist. What is it about a journalist with access? If they don't have a question, why do they feel compelled to ask one? Why can't they just go, you know, I'm not going to raise my hand. I'm out of questions. We're done. You know, that seems to be when they, although not the CNN correspondent. CNN has an idiotic contingency at the White House. But most of them, it's their third bite at the apple where they ask the really, really dumb question. There's nothing wrong with going, yeah, thanks, Mr. President. We're good. Now we're ready to question Fauci and Birx or the vice president or something. And they just don't seem to run out of questions. They run to their stupid file and go, all right, let's ask about the price of oil, even though I have no idea what the price of oil is today. And the president smacks them around. They gets into an argument with Jonathan Carl or asks a reporter from a Chinese outlet if they're state-owned. No, no, no. And then it turns out, well, yes, yes, yes. It strikes me as, why wouldn't you just, there's always the old saying, is if about being an idiot, is when you open your mouth and confirm that you're an idiot. Don't open your mouth to confirm that you're an idiot. That seems to be where these people live.
Well, if they don't, they keep asking questions because they've got to get some sound bites for their nightly clown shows, right? I mean, this is what they do every night on their clown shows, is they talk about one of them or one of their employees or their activists that trying to get Trump. Right. And that's what they talk about. They're not talking about details about this situation on the ground. They're talking about Trump, and they're talking about their effort to get Trump. And then a lot of these want to be political celebrities. Right. They got to get on the camera. Right. They want to get that in. It's like they're fighting to be important and a celebrity in their own world, where the highest virtue is like getting the orange bad man.
Well, that brings us to hydroxychloroquine. Yeah, I have never seen anybody, let alone almost everybody, actively root against something working that would undoubtedly be a massive benefit to all of mankind, simply because the guy advocating for it, or pointing it out, really, he's not even advocating for it, pointing it out, happens to be somebody you disagree with politically. That's the most shocking thing about this, is I think that if given the choice and you secretly polled their inner psyche, these journalists in the White House press corps and all the talking heads on cable, it'd be 90-10 that they would rather have a higher body count than Trump be right.
Absolutely. I mean, these people care more about the details surrounding hydroxychloroquine than they do about the details about how the virus came here. Right. I mean, they care more about making sure that this drug, which is an old drug, it's been around, it's a generic, it's very cheap. How great is that? Maybe we have something that helps people avoid getting on a ventilator or needing oxygen or needing hospitalization and getting pneumonia. And it's an old, cheap drug. And not some brand new drug that's like $1 million.
Well, we know the side effects, where we've had, 80 years of not essentially clinical trials. We know the side effects. It's not immediate death. It's discomfort sometimes.
Well, the thing is that in order to get this medicine, a doctor has to write a prescription for you, right? This isn't like the toilet paper that everybody's hoarding at the grocery store. If you want to go on this protocol, which I think is a mixture of hydroxychloroquine, Z-Pak, azithromycin, and then some zinc. I think some doctors are using zinc.
I think it's hydroxychloroquine and a Z-Pak, or chloroquine and zinc.
Right.
I mean, they're two different sort of cocktails.
Chloroquine, I may or may not have tried to purchase some at an overseas pharmacy. I can't say one way or the other. But the price for chloroquine is $12 for 90 pills. Okay. So isn't that great? It's so cheap. And yet these people are just hell bent on they're rooting for the virus. They're rooting for the virus and against a potential cure. But even so, a doctor has to make that decision about whether you're a candidate to take it. And yes, there are side effects, and your doctor knows what those are, because they've been probably prescribing it to people that have lupus or rheumatoid arthritis for a really long time. And so they know that. So if it doesn't hurt you, who cares, right? Maybe it doesn't work, but also who cares? Mm-hmm. But these people, they just do not. I have to say, this is one of the most stark, obvious, pathetic moments for media bias I've ever seen. And they're still out there writing stories about how Trump is profiting off of this 6-year-old generic drug that's for pennies, that you buy for pennies. And meanwhile, the drug is being used. it's out there. Doctors are using it. They're using it in hospitals. They're prescribing it to people. And it seems like they're having some success. So, but they're still pushing it. So I guess they don't want it.
It's notable that they aren't, that they don't have the same level of vitriol when Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, says, yeah, we've been using it. And it's shown promise anecdotally. We don't have data, but it's shown promise anecdotally. We want more. Or when the governor of my state of origin, my old home state of Michigan, Governor Gretchen Whitmer, at first said, no, you can't give this out. Don't give. Now suddenly she's like, hey, can we have some? Can we please do this?
Yeah.
They don't face they don't face any vitriol for it. It's barely ever reported.
Well, there's no consequences for their hypocrisy, right? The fact that Trump said it and then also Cuomo said it and they never ask Cuomo about it. They just want to hit Trump. And there's no consequences for basically being very unprofessional and pulling that like they do all the time on a lot of issues. It's always okay to have a double standard depending on who are the people involved. And there's no consequences for you and I or people that have regular jobs. If we fail at our jobs, we're going to get fired. If we do a bad job, we do a poor job, a lazy job, also fired. What's with these people? Nothing. There's no consequences. They have amnesia every day. It's like they start over, like all of their track record, doesn't exist. And they start all over again.
Oh, well, terrible. That's been evident. Donald Trump downplayed this whole thing from the very beginning. He wasted time. And then you go back into the archives, and they're sitting there preaching to their audience going, this is the flu. You should be more concerned about the flu. This is no big deal. These are the people who spent 10 days lecturing us about how noting the place of origin geographically of this virus is akin to a cross burning. Then you go back into the archives again and you say, wait a second, here's 15 hours of archival footage of you guys saying the exact same thing. Why did it only become a problem when Doug Collins first quoted you guys on Twitter? And then suddenly it's like, no, that's racist. Don't do that. The hypocrisy. I mean, we're seeing this in the approval ratings. Reporters, the journalists, in quotes, are less popular than coronavirus.
I think.
Or pretty damn close. So they, in many ways, journalists are happily willing to be suicide bombers as long as they think they can take out or damage or harm the president of the United States. Is that being too harsh?
I don't think it's being too harsh. But if you look at it like this is no longer about a profession. This is just like they're community organizers that have cable shows. They're talking to people who want to hear what they're saying, right? They want to hear somebody mimic back to them their own political bias and prejudices. And so that's their niche. MSNBC, CNN, The New York Times, those people are no longer looking for information. They're not open-minded. I mean, look, when this started, I didn't know what was going on. I'm sure you didn't know. You were probably like, well, you're going to wait and see if we can get some more information. We have no idea how this is going to play out, how deadly this thing really is. And really, we still don't know. And we're not going to know for a long time. I'm not a pharmacist. I don't know if this drug works or not. But hey, if it's not very risky, why not give it a try?
Well, the choice is you may well die, or you have this, it may work, it might not work, but you still may well die. Like, well, you can try something or nothing. You can accept death. You can go carve off a piece of the ice floe and drift off into the distance. Or you can give this a shot. I've always been I'll give this a shot kind of guy.
But you keep your mind open, right? Like in other words, when this is offered up as a suggestion and you hear anecdotal and little studies that have been done that show it's, You keep it open. You're not like, well, Trump said it can't be right. Because again, the media, those people that are the most famous in these pressers for asking questions, that's what their audience wants to hear. I mean, we're at a place now where the New York Times will change its headlines because its readers do not think that they're mean enough. That happened.
They'll change it three times.
Yep.
All right. How about this one? No. All right. Well, then how about this one? And if you look, as a rational person, if you just think about it, malaria is not an allergic reaction to a mosquito bite. It is a virus transmitted by mosquitoes. So if something inhibits a virus, any virus, then you might think, hey, wait a second, it might inhibit other viruses, because viruses tend to function in relatively the same way on a cellular level and how they attack the cells. There is no exploration. There is no curiosity of that possibility. There's no explanation of that on CNN. There is Anderson Cooper virtue signaling and Chris Cuomo virtue peacocking in a cold sweat in his basement, saying bullshit about what the president is saying. But I guarantee you, if Chris Cuomo's fever got bad and his brother said, you've got to take this drug because it could help you, he'd take it. He may have taken it already. I don't know.
He'll probably never admit it.
I bet you dollars to donuts, if he did take it, he'd never, ever mention it until maybe December. Maybe
the
day November.
After the election.
November 4th. He'd go, oh, by the way, you know, we did this.
Yeah.
It is the biggest corruption I've ever seen in my life. And I grew up in Detroit and I lived in Baltimore and I've seen corruption. I mean, hell, two of the last three mayors in Baltimore were forced to leave office for corruption. So, and you lived in Vegas, which, yeah. You know, again, it's a mob.
I know about corruption. It's gross, but you know, this is where we are now politically. And I know I just discount these people. I don't take them seriously. I see everything they say and do is just like more of an activist or a political action and not giving information. I think that they're saying the things they say for a reason, and that reason is not to give me information. It's to tell me what to think. That's what they're doing.
Right. Well, they're conditioning you for that. And that's what's sad, because we both work in this business. We need information. You want information. I couldn't care less if CNN broke a story. I just want it to be accurate. They don't seem to do journalism anymore. No journalist really does journalism. It's something unique to CNN and MSNBC. The Fox News has like 12 journalists on staff. You'd think they have this massive staff. They don't. And they've got a lot of talking heads. But we need information. It's wildly important. And it's almost impossible to find anymore, except for on websites. Thank God
especially,
for websites.
Especially when we're in the middle of this pandemic where mm-hmm. people are scared for their lives. I mean, we're not just talking about the latest bill being debated in the House or the Senate. We're literally talking about people's health, and they're afraid for their lives, their children, their older parents, their siblings. And we can't get a serious person in the press briefings to just ask serious questions of Fauci or Birx or Giroir or any of these other people that are coming there with information, and said we play gotcha. So it's very unfortunate. But I think that the media is a business. It's about clicks. It's about sensationalism. It's if it bleeds, it leads on steroids. So
right.
Very sad.
I would love to see, because real journalists would demand, look, we need these modelers out here. We need to know whose models you're following and how they're building these models, because they have been so wildly inaccurate. Maybe there's a perfectly rational explanation for it, but I need to hear it from them. And to hear it from them, they also have to stand up to a little bit of scrutiny. You sit around and you know, both Birx and Fauci say, well, until we get 15 peer-reviewed studies that are triple blind about hydroxychloroquine, we couldn't possibly ever endorse something like that, because they're gun-shy and paranoid of lawsuits like all doctors, and they're technocrats. They don't really care. They're dealing in abstracts, and people suffering are dealing in abstracts. They're not dealing with patients. But we are owed an explanation as to who these people are who are essentially superseding the president of the United States.
Yeah, I agree.
And how it is they got it so wrong. If there is, because we were told those models took into consideration all the social distancing. If there's a rational explanation, we can accept a rational explanation. But if they can't even stand up to a little bit of scrutiny, then I'm not sure why we should continue to listen to them. I still say keep the social distancing, if only to cut down on cold and pneumonia and stuff like that. But we need answers, and we aren't even getting the people whose job it is to get those answers to get anywhere in the same time zone as the right questions.
Right. That's a big deal to a lot of us who are, I know you're similar to where I am on this, but we aren't getting a lot of data from the CDC, which we know is collecting the data. Like, we kept hearing about hospitals getting slammed and there's not enough room and people are like dying in the streets because they don't have ventilators. And yet we can't get basic number. And I know that they have these numbers. What hospitals are at what capacity? How come we don't know that? That's easy. That's easy peasy.
And
they know this.
Have been overrun? Because we hear it was always, this was going to happen. This was going to happen. And then, well, did it happen? Where is it? What happened? Where? Why didn't it happen? We were promised cake, punch and pie, and we didn't get punch and pie. Where's the punch and pie? I want to know, if only to know, well, that's good. How did they manage to avoid that in New Orleans being overrun? Maybe we can use that information someplace else. Or maybe there's a more nefarious reason that it didn't happen. But again,
well, also,
you can't answer the questions if you're not being asked them.
Well, also critical information where people can make decisions about their own choices. For instance, what's the age breakdown of the what's the fatality rate? What are the features of fatality rate? Like, where is it a cutoff? Like, where is it an acceptable risk for somebody to, you know, continue their lives without or open their business and say, yes, it's very unlikely that someone who's however old, let's say I'm 35, I'm older, but you know, we don't have information where people are able to make the best decisions for themselves. Maybe it is mostly older people with a lot of different health conditions. And if you don't fit that profile, maybe you're willing to say, hey, I'm going to take the risk. I'm going to go to the store. I'm going to open my business. Things like that. We don't have that information. And that's really important because the government's making that decision for us. And that their decision is to basically wipe out the economy, people's jobs, small businesses, medium-sized businesses, all of that. So I don't know. And I would like someone to ask, where are these numbers that you're getting? Because every press conference, Dr. Birx says, oh, well, we go over the numbers. We know exactly where things are going. We know exactly admissions rates. We know where to send the ventilators. And then it's like, okay, great. Well, can you share that? Like, I want to know what hospitals are overrun. How many empty beds are there?
It reminds me a lot of the AIDS epidemic. Nobody wanted to admit in the 90s that AIDS was largely, not exclusively, but largely a gay disease. We were told growing up, anybody can get AIDS. You're probably going to get AIDS, quite honestly. You're more than likely going to catch AIDS. So you better live in fear of getting AIDS and just wrap yourself in latex constantly. When in reality, through normal heterosexual sex with a male partner who hasn't been engaged in homosexual sex, the odds of that man getting AIDS, even if the woman has it, is very, very low. And a woman giving it to a woman is nearly impossible, but a man giving it to a man or an infected man giving it to a woman, yes, possible. They didn't want the stigma attached to it, so they concocted the lie that, okay, well, everybody has to pay attention to this. That'll get us more funding. That'll make more people care. We'll all put on the ribbons. Any one of us could go down from this, and probably half of us will. And we now know that that was more of a marketing ploy than anything based remotely on science. Maybe after the fact, because the limited data we have does suggest that this is older people with pre-existing conditions, we'll find out that for most people, this was next to nothing. And a lot of people hear, well, they didn't know that he also had this. And people who are dying, they're finding out that they, oh, by the way, they were low-grade asthmatic or super high blood pressure, an undiagnosed heart problem. But if they say that, then people who don't have secondary conditions will sort of go, oh, all right, I can go about my business. Now, that case could be made. You don't want to expose other people to it, and then so on and so forth. Or you could have an undiagnosed thing. Hospitals could be overrun, whatever. But that's not the case they're making. And that leads people to fill in the blanks. And that's where the real problem comes in, I think, for government, is when the people are left to fill in the blanks. Like, if we don't get an explanation as to why the models are so wrong, we're going to fill in the blanks. And that never works out well for anybody.
Well, I think that, right. And I fill in the blanks by saying they're purposely being ambiguous and murky to better control us. really, because they can't tell everybody to be socially distant and stay home and don't go to work. And then also say, but, you know, basically your likelihood of contracting this virus and it killing you is like 0.0000, whatever. They can't say that and expect people to obey it, because they're right now ringing the alarm bell and getting everyone to panic. And you still have people that are ignoring it and going to bars, hanging out on the beach and whatever else. And so you can only imagine if they hadn't come out with these dire warnings without, you know, data for people to go through it and take a look, that nobody at all would listen to them. So,
they're benefited by the, you know, the worst case scenario is they look like fools and they say, we saved lives. It doesn't matter if you think you were lied to. We know we saved lives.
And then
the alternative, the alternative to that is they were wrong and there's no way to prove it.
Right.
So we will literally never know what could have been, because all we know is what was. And what was a very pleasant time talking to Liz Schild.
Thank you.
Tell people about American Greatness and where they can go to find it, and your daily morning newsletter, because you're up at the ass crack of dawn writing that every day.
It's a great summary. When you're finishing your podcast, you're done recording. You can find my Morning Greatness roundup. It's a morning introduction of the news of the day with a lot of snark and bitterness sometimes and sarcasm at amgreatness.com. And it's usually ready to go by 7 a.m. So you can read it and then you can listen to Derek's podcast. Cause that's what I do. I write it and then I listen to Derek's podcast.
Yeah. You're the only the second guest, I think, who listens to the show regularly. Adam Baldwin sent me a text message the other day, or a couple of weeks, when the swearing show, because you actually called me up after the swearing show.
I was like, that's the best show you've ever done. It's awesome. It was on fire.
you called me up and Adam Baldwin sent me a text, and I had no idea. I knew that you had, because we live near each other. We hang out. I didn't know that he listened, because never bothered to reach out. He sent me a text that really liking the new tone. Well done. I'm like, holy shit. I had no idea you listened. That was cool. So, well, Liz, thank you. You're at Star Chambermaid on Twitter.
Yes.
And amgreatness.com is the website, correct?
Yes, that's it.
And that is it. That is all the time we have for today. Thank you guys for listening, tuning in, telling a friend, whatever. David Limbaugh on the program tomorrow. You don't want to miss that. I'll see you then.